Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So I was assigned to talk about the 12 other gurus. Was there anybody who wasn't here yesterday? Everyone is here? Beautiful. So we're continuing the 24 gurus of the Avadhuta that King Yadu met on his travels. So actually, Lakshmimoni helped me out yesterday by doing 16 of them, so there are only 8 left. And 7 of these are described in the chapter summary of the 9th chapter of the 11th canto, entitled Detachment from All That Is Material. So I thought we could read these and maybe just say a few brief words about them. Somebody want to be my reader and read one of them? Somebody else can read the second. This is the summary of the 9th chapter, which deals with 7 of these 24 gurus. And we're going to talk about these just very briefly and then spend most of the time on Pingala the prostitute. Sagana? No, this is from the Srimad Bhagavatam. In the beginning of each chapter, there's a summary. So I assume because it's chapter 11, it was written by Hridayananda Goswami. Yeah. And so, could somebody read the up to the first guru for me, and we'll talk about that briefly.
Detachment from all that is material. The Avadhuta Brahmana describes his 7 remaining gurus, beginning with the Kurara birth. He also describes an additional guru, one's own body. The instruction received from the Kurara birth is that attachment creates misery, but the person who is unattached and has no material possessions is qualified to achieve unlimited happiness.
Somebody want to read the next one?
The Avadhuta Brahman learned from the foolish, lazy child that by becoming free from anxiety, a person becomes capable of worshipping the Supreme Personality of Godhead and experiencing supreme ecstasy.
Okay, so if we have all kinds of material plans and ambitions, our mind won't be able to focus on the worship of the Lord. But the lazy child, because he had nothing in particular to do, he could just focus on the Lord. I don't know. I'd have to get involved in reading each of the purports, in analyzing them, and in the half hour I had to prepare for this class, I didn't. Continue. Want to read the next one?
The instruction received from the young girl who kept just one conch shell bracelet on each wrist is that one should remain alone and thus steadies one's mind. Then only will it be possible for one to fix one's mind completely on the personality of Godhead. Once several men arrived to ask for the hand of the young girl, whose relatives had considerably
coincidentally
left the house. She went inside and began to prepare food for the
unexpected guests
by beating rice. At that time, her conch shell bracelets were making a loud noise, rattling against each other. And in order to stop this sound, she broke off the bracelets one by one until at last only one remained on each arm. Just as 2 or more bracelets make noise, if even 2 people reside in the same place, what to speak of many, there is every chance of mutual quarrel and useless gossip.
Yes. So that's an important point. Actually, the great grand spiritual master of Lord Chaitanya, Madhavendra Puri, he had a program of just living alone, traveling as a mendicant, because he didn't want to live with other people, because he didn't want to talk any nonsense. He just wanted to do his chanting about Krishna and meditating on Krishna and offering prayers to Krishna. So the tendency is, although we could just talk with Krishna Katha with the people around us and then then every moment of every word we say would be uplifting. That isn't always the case. So if it isn't the case, then it's better that we're alone. And it reminds me of how when Bhakti Marg Swami was giving his initiation lecture back in December, in addition to the four regular principles, he added another one: do not gossip. And he thought it was so important that it should be a fifth regular principle. So, continue.
The Avadhut Brahman also received instruction from the arrow maker, who was so absorbed in constructing an arrow that he did not even notice that the king was passing right by him on the road. In the same way, one must strictly control one's mind, concentrating it in the worship of Lord Srihari.
So that idea is right out of the Bhagavad Gita. There's a nice little analogy, like as a lamp burning in the windless place does not waver, suddenly one should be one-pointed in his meditation on the Supreme Lord. So actually, our big sacrifice in this age is the chanting of the holy name, and our initiated devotees, we take vows to chant 16 rounds of the Hare Krishna mantra. So when we're chanting this Hare Krishna mantra, we shouldn't be thinking about the past, we shouldn't be dreaming about the future, we should just be hearing every syllable of Krishna's name in full consciousness that this is Krishna himself who's appeared in his sound incarnation, and we're actually in intimate touch with him through hearing just the syllables of his beautiful name. And even if you just focus a little bit on the chanting of japa, the minimum benedictions, you'll feel inspired to chant the next day. What to speak of feeling detached from illusory things in this world and attachment to Krishna. The very minimum is you'll feel inspired when the next day comes and it's time to chant. You'll be eager to pick up your beads and, you know, try and connect with Krishna again. Next.
The Avadhuta Brahmana learned from the great serpent that a sage would wander alone, should not live in any prearranged place, should be always careful and grave, should not reveal his movements, should take assistance from no one, and should speak very little.
So those called to mind the six Goswamis who they said they slept under a different tree each night because they didn't want to become attached to one particular tree.
Instruction obtained from the spider who spins his web from his mouth and then withdraws it is that the Supreme Personality of Godhead similarly creates from out of himself the whole universe and then winds up into himself.
Yes, that's actually there's basically Krishna and Krishna's energy. So when the material universe is manifested, Krishna's energy is manifest and then he withdraws it into himself. But there's always nothing but Krishna and Krishna's energies.
Okay, I can kind of see it. From the weak insect to assume the same form as the, is that Peshakrit? Peshakrit wasp. The Avadhuta Brahmana learned that the living entity, under the sway of affection, hatred, and fear, attains in his next life the identity of that object upon which he fixes his intelligence.
Yes, that's an important point that Krishna makes in the Bhagavad Gita. Whatever state of being one remembers when he quits his body, that state he will attain without fail. So it's very. And then there's the story of Maharaj Bharata, who, even though he had attained this stage of bhava, the preliminary stage of love of God, ecstatic love of God, by circumstance, he became attached to this fawn who lost its mother, and he began taking care of the fawn, and his taking care of the fawn took more and more time away from his sadhana. And pretty soon, instead of meditating on the personality of Godhead, he was meditating on the fawn. And when he died unexpectedly, that meditation gave him the body of a deer in the next life, even though he'd made so much advancement in devotional service. So it's a very important point. Want to finish off the last one, someone?
Seeing that the fragile material body is subject to birth and death, one who is sober should become devoid of material attachment to this body and should properly utilize this rare gift of human life in the pursuit of knowledge, endeavoring always for the achievement of the highest goal.
So the final guru we're going to deal with. Does anybody have any questions about any of those?
I have kind of a question.
Okay.
A lot of this detachment and everything, even though I can see, you know, definitely see where it's right and it's beneficial and everything, isn't it kind of a little cold?
I think it can be cold, but it doesn't have to be cold, because for one thing, that although we understand that our relationships with people in this world are temporary, because they're based on the body, our relationships with them as souls are eternal, because we're all eternal souls. Like Krishna says, never was there a time that I did not exist, nor you, nor all these kings. So we're eternally existent as souls. So it's actually foolish to disregard people, because they're people we have an eternal relationship with. But the aspect of our relationship that's based on the body is temporary and illusory, and to imagine that is permanent, you know, is a great illusion. Like for example, my mother is my mother this life. There's no clue whether she was my mother last life or whether she'll be my mother next life. You know? But just because my relationship as her son is temporary doesn't mean I should disregard her as a soul. You know, it's fun. Welcome. Just because the relationship as mother and son is temporary doesn't mean that I should disregard her as a soul. Like sometimes we make so many arrangements to, like on the campus, we're distributing Krishna prasadam to 900 people every day, you know. So, and when we go home, we should also be enthusiastic to distribute prasadam to our family members. It's not like we just preach to the people in general and we don't care about the spiritual, you know, benefit of our family members, because we do have a relationship with them as souls to encourage them in their devotion to Krishna, just as we encourage ourselves in our devotion to Krishna, and we encourage others in devotion to Krishna. So what we're talking about being detached from is being detached from the illusory conception that I am this body, you are that body, and the relationship based on the bodies is eternal when in fact it's temporary. And if we pretend that it's eternal during this lifetime, when it comes to an end, it will be a great shock and disappointment. Whereas if we've been thinking that it's temporary all the way along, it won't be such a traumatic experience when it breaks in the course of time, because we've been expecting it will break in the course of time. But we shouldn't disregard our duties we have in relationship with the other people just because the relationship is temporary. And we shouldn't neglect the fact that they're a spiritual soul and they deserve to be respected as every other spiritual soul, because that we are in a temporary situation with them. Yes?
So much on the association of other devotees to keep our own enthusiasm for spiritual life. So I'm just wondering, is it like, should we come to a point in our life where we would be Krishna conscious alone, even if we were all alone, and not need others to foster that?
Well, that's an interesting point, because it's, on one hand, it's said that even for somebody at the stage of prema, the most important thing is the association of devotees. So that's sort of a constant thing. And of course, when we go back to the spiritual world, that's what we have. Association with Krishna and his devotees. So I think a lot of the being alone is for following that instruction by the Rupa Goswami. It's interesting, actually, because Rupa Goswami is Upadesha Amrita, Nectar of Instruction. He has lists of what you should do and what you shouldn't do. And one thing you should do is you should avoid the association of materialistic people. You should avoid that. And one thing you should not do is you should not associate with materialistic people. So apparently, association with materialistic people is so bad, it appears on both lists, one in a positive way and one in a negative way. And that's... then these devotees from this village, Kalina Gram, this householders from this village, they met with Lord Chaitanya, and they asked him what was the most important thing to become Krishna conscious, and he would say that that one should chant the holy name and associate with the devotees of Krishna. And one of the definitions he gave for a devotee of Krishna is one who gives up the association of materialistic people. So I would say that's mostly the being alone part is the detachment from the materialistic people. And certainly for somebody who's a male who's going to be a sannyasi, that's one of the qualifications of a sannyasi, that he's supposed to be completely fearless because he appreciates Krishna's in his heart. Krishna's there with him all the time. Krishna's protecting him. Krishna's enlightening him. And Prabhupada says in the purport to 16.1 Bhagavad Gita, the first quality of the first divine quality given is abhayam. And he says that if a sannyasi doesn't have this fearlessness based on the fact that he knows Krishna is in their heart, then he shouldn't take sannyas. So, it's the best I can do with that. Especially on 5 hours of sleep and short notice.
May I add something to that? That was a really good question. And just as talking about Krishna is comparable to silence, and taking prasad is comparable to fasting, so association with devotees is comparable to being alone in that respect. And the example is given of the birds flying in formation. When we're progressing in Krishna consciousness, we're like that. We get strength from one another, and yet each bird is independent. And if one goes down, all the others together can't save it. See, so when we are progressing in Krishna consciousness, we have that solitude built in. And this is why, one of the reasons why the negative and positive is giving up association of non-devotees. So we need the association of devotees, but we're alone in that respect. There's more we could say on that.
Take up your clay. I had asked Prabhupada when I was in a quite bewildered state, having been preached at by about 50 devotees. And being quite neophyte, what's actually most important? What do I do? And believe me, the instructions were many. Prabhupada basically said association. Two realizations I had. Association has to be chosen carefully. It's not just because someone is claiming to be a devotee, or somebody's claiming not to be a devotee. We have to associate with people who are like-minded, who spiritually inspire us. So indiscriminate association with those who are hanging around devotional services, maybe even they're advanced and engaging in devotional service, but cause much more perspiration than inspiration, may not be it. So association requires some discrimination. And then sometimes Prabhupada would take devotees and send them off virtually alone or a couple alone someplace. So if association is such a key principle, why is he sending Bhurjan off to Hong Kong for 2 years? There he is alone in Hong Kong. He had so little association that every day somebody sent him Tulsi seeds, and every day he's marching around Tulsi, Yani, Kani, Chapapani. Every day he's doing that. And then finally, 6 months later, a devotee shows up. He says, "What are you doing?" He says, "Worshipping Tulsi." He goes, "That's not Tulsi. A weed had grown." I've never seen in his life. That's not so. There, Prabhupada set off 6 months virtually alone, you know, just he and his wife. So sometimes circumstances are such that we can end up alone, but you know, just craving association or association in more virtual ways by books, letters. You know, Prabhupada was quite lonely in America when he first came. You read his letters, you have to see that. And he would go, you know, he went to the dock wondering when the boat was going back to India just to make sure it was going. I mean, and he would, you know, not only associate with Lord within the heart, as his diary reveals, but he would write to his God brothers, one in particular, will you please send them a danga already? But it would never come. So these things are going on. So, I mean, there's circumstances. That's all. I don't want to take too much.
Oh, thank you for your nice contributions. So I think we have to continue, otherwise we won't cover what we have to cover today. So yeah. So we actually, what we really want is maybe I'll call it up on my computer and plug it in there, because what I really wanted to do is read the verses. I mean, I could read them myself, but it's more fun, I think, if other people read them. The verses to chapter 8 that deal with Pingala, because her what she says is just has so much in it. I really would just like to just read them all and just talk about one of them. So if you can get just the verses, I don't know. And that starts somewhere, let's see. There's a way to call up just the verses. Do you know how to do that in the folio?
Oh, yeah, if you go back.
Yeah, if you go to the top of the... yeah. And I'll tell you which number it is here. Pingala starts at... okay, starts at 22. Actually, it's at 23. Right, so yeah, you go down to number 8 and then click on translations. Yeah, click on translations. Beautiful. And scroll down to number 22. Scroll ballers on the left or the right there, just yeah, or you page down, right? So yes, so go around and start reading and just listen attentively, and then we're going to talk about number 31 after we read the whole thing.
Can you make the video? Yeah.
So why can't we stay calling? Because I was not born blind.
Well, you could cut them out and paste them in Word and make them bigger. Or we can just have the people who are closest to read it, you know, and the others can hear. Yeah. Well, I'm going to read it myself then, and whoever's close enough can read it also. In the city of Vidaya, there dwelled a prostitute named Pingala. Now please hear what I learned from that lady. Once that prostitute, desiring to bring a lover into a house, stood outside the doorway at night, showing her beautiful form. Well, best among men, the prostitute was very anxious to get money, and as she stood at the street at night, she studied all the men who were passing by, thinking, "Oh, this one surely has money. I know he can pay the price, and I'm sure he would enjoy my company very much." Thus she thought about all the men on the street. As the prostitute Pingala stood in the doorway, many men came and went, walking by her house. Her only means of sustenance was prostitution, and therefore she actually thought, "Maybe this one who is coming, he is very rich. Oh, he's not stopping, but I'm sure someone else will come. Surely this man who's coming now will want to pay me for my love, and he'll probably give me lots of money." Thus, with vain hope, she remained leaning against the doorway, unable to finish her business and go to sleep. Out of anxiety, she would sometimes walk toward the street, and sometimes she went back to her house. In this way, the midnight hour gradually arrived. As the night wore on, the prostitute, who intensely desired money, gradually became morose, and her face dried up. Thus, being filled with anxiety for money and most disappointed, she began to feel great detachment from her situation, and happiness arose in her mind. The prostitute felt disgusted with her material situation and thus became indifferent to it. Indeed, detachment acts like a sword, cutting to pieces the binding network of material hopes and desires. Now please hear for me the song sung by the prostitute in that situation. O King, just as a human being who is bereft of spiritual knowledge never desires to give up the false sense of proprietorship over many material things, similarly a person who has not developed detachment never desires to give up the bondage of the material body. The prostitute Pingala said, "Just see how greatly illusioned I am. Because I cannot control my mind, just like a fool, I desire lusty pleasure from an insignificant man. I'm such a fool that I've given up the service of that person who, being eternally situated in my heart, is actually most dear to me. That most dear one is the Lord of the universe, who is the bestower of real love and happiness and the source of all prosperity. Although he is in my own heart, I've completely neglected him. Instead, I've ignorantly served insignificant men who can never satisfy my real desires and who have brought me unhappiness, fear, anxiety, lamentation, and illusion." I'm on 31. And 31 is the one we'll talk about, and we'll read the purport. There's just a few more after that. "Oh, how have I uselessly tortured my own soul? I have sold my body to lusty, greedy men who are themselves objects of pity. Thus, practicing the most abominable profession of a prostitute, I hoped to get money and sex pleasure. This material body is like a house in which I, the soul, am living. The bones forming my spine, ribs, arms, and legs are like the beams, cross beams, and pillars of that house. And the whole structure, which is full of stool and urine, is covered by skin, hair, and nails. The nine doors leading into this body are constantly excreting foul substances. Besides me, what woman could be so foolish as to devote herself to this material body, thinking that she might find pleasure and love in this contraption? Certainly in this city of Videha, I alone am completely foolish. I have neglected the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who awards us everything, even our original spiritual form. Instead, I desire to enjoy sense gratification with many men. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is absolutely the most dear one for all living beings because he's everyone's well-wisher and Lord. He's the Supreme Soul seated in everyone's heart. Therefore, I will now pay the price of complete surrender, and thus purchasing the Lord, I will enjoy with him, just like Lakshmi Devi. Men provide sense gratification for women, but all these men, even the demigods in heaven, have a beginning and an end. They are all temporary creations who will be dragged away by time. Therefore, how much actual pleasure or happiness could any of them ever give to their wives? Although I most stubbornly hope to enjoy the material world, somehow or other detachment has arisen in my heart and is making me very happy. Thus the Supreme Personality of Godhead Vishnu must be pleased with me. Without even knowing it, I must have performed some activity satisfying to him. A person who has developed detachment can give up the bondage of material society, friendship, and love, and a person who undergoes great suffering gradually becomes out of hopelessness, detached and indifferent to the material world. Thus, due to my great suffering, such detachment awoke in my heart. Yet how could I have undergone such merciful suffering if I were actually unfortunate. Therefore, in fact, I am fortunate and have received the mercy of the Lord. He must somehow or other be pleased with me. With devotion, I accept the great benefit that the Lord has bestowed upon me. Having given up my sinful desires for ordinary sense gratification, I now take shelter of Him, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. I am now completely satisfied. I have full faith in the Lord's mercy. Therefore, I will maintain myself with whatever comes of its accord. I shall enjoy life with only the Lord, because He's the real source of love and happiness. So it continues a little bit, but I thought we'd just read one purport, because it's always good to read the purports. So maybe we could go back to 31, and someone can read the purport for us.
Pingala laments that she chose to serve most sinful, useless men. She falsely thought that they would bring her happiness and neglected to serve the actual Lord of the heart, Krishna. She could understand how foolishly she had struggled for money, not knowing that the Supreme Lord is always inclined to award prosperity to His sincere devotee. The prostitute was proud of her ability to please men, but she now laments that she did not try to please the Supreme Lord by loving service. The Supreme Lord is completely aloof from the transactions of the material world. Lord Krishna is the actual enjoyer of everyone and everything, but one must learn how to please the Lord by pure spiritual service.
Thank you. So this is a success story where Pingala becomes successful through hopelessness in material enjoyment. And she actually realizes that failure in material enjoyment is actually the Lord's mercy. It's also actually a great credit to the Vedic culture that such exalted thoughts would arise in the mind of a prostitute. We can't really imagine in this degraded society we live in due to the insufficient educational system that an ordinary prostitute would have such divine knowledge. But so she's very fortunate, actually. And she's actually come to the point where she's lost faith in relationships based on sense enjoyment. Sometimes I travel a little bit with Kadama Kanana Swami, and that's a theme in his preaching, that we have to come to the point where we actually lose faith that material relationships will actually satisfy our soul. That relationships based on sex pleasure will actually bring us that happiness that we've always dreamed of. There's sort of an idea that we have in our mind. I don't know where it comes from exactly, but we sort of have this idea that there is the ideal person of the opposite sex who's everything we ever dreamed of, who exists somewhere in this world. And for them, we are that ideal person. And that when we get together, we'll have the most amazing relationship that will last the duration of this life, and it will be filled with unimpeded happiness at every moment. And he suggests that this actually is a great illusion, and that if we're convinced that it's a great illusion, then we can move on to reestablishing our real relationship that's actually eternal with the Personality of Godhead in one of five rasas, which will automatically awaken when we get to the point of pure spontaneous devotional service. So Pingala is very fortunate because by circumstance she actually lost faith in ultimate fulfillment in the material world, and therefore she could give her heart completely to the Personality of Godhead, which she does. And I gave a class one time in Chaupati. It was actually a similar situation. I was told, like, I think I was told at 10 o'clock at night the person who canceled. So actually I got a little bit of time to study the previous day. So, because also they book classes way in advance. If you're a Prabhupada disciple, of course, they let you speak immediately. But I was 2 years too late for that privilege. So I gave a class and I was thinking about this was much more popular in Chaupati than it will be in Gainesville. There's a sort of degraded relationship between men and women in that's known as the one night stand. Actually, it's a relationship that only lasts one night for the mutual sensual pleasure of both of the participants. And it's seen as very degraded, practically on the level of this prostitute relationship that's been discussed here. But I thought from the point of view of eternality, you know, like in our life, how many days do we live? Maybe we live 20,000 days, you know. So a relationship that lasts one day, you know, that's very insignificant. But actually, maybe we've had 20,000 lives. So a relationship that lasts just one life, actually, that's very insignificant, actually. But so if we have a relationship based on sense gratification that lasts one life, or a relationship based on sense gratification that lasts one night, what's the difference, actually? The important thing is that to realize that because we're souls, that no relationship based on sense gratification, however long or short it is, will satisfy our soul. But we do have a real relationship. That actually romance is real. You can read about Krishna and Rukmini's romance in the Krishna book. You can read about Radharani and Krishna's romance in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. There's actually real romance. It actually really exists on a real, in relationship to the spiritual plane. And there's real brotherhood. There's real, like, Krishna and Arjuna. There's real, like, fraternal relationships, friendly relationships of people of the same sex. There's actually a real relationship we have with God. And as long as we are thinking that we're going to find ultimate satisfaction in a relationship in this world, we won't be able to give our heart wholly and completely to the personality of Godhead. So there's some different... there's one very nice verse in this connection. It's quoted in the Nectar of Devotion. It's a prayer, actually. Oh my Lord, as young girls have natural affection for young boys, and young boys have natural affection for young girls, I'm simply praying unto your lotus feet that I may become attracted to you, O Lord, in the same spontaneous way. That's spontaneous attraction to Krishna, because Krishna is described as having 64 transcendental qualities to an unlimited extent. So when our soul is awakened enough that we can perceive these 64 transcendental qualities of Krishna, we will be spontaneously attracted to them, just him, as boys are attracted to girls and girls are attracted to boys. Krishna really is that attractive. He's more attractive. He's the most attractive person. And by the practice of this devotional service, sadhana bhakti, that our spontaneous affection for the Lord actually will awaken in the course of time. As our consciousness becomes uncovered from all kinds of material conceptions. And therefore this process of bhakti is incredibly exciting, because we stand to have an eternal relationship with the most qualified person in the universe that lasts forever. But we can't fully dedicate our heart to attaining this relationship if we're distracted by the idea that an ultimate pleasure, ultimate satisfaction will come from gaining money or gaining sensual pleasure, as Pingala fortunately realized that it would not come from, and therefore could just give her heart to the personality of Godhead. And Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, as they surrender unto me, I reward them accordingly. Everyone follows my path in all respects. So at this point that Pingala came to the point of wanting to give herself completely to the Lord, and the Lord on the other side, when one gives oneself completely to him, he gives himself completely to the devotee. And then one has a relationship of love that continues forever and is completely satisfying. And so basically Pingala's lesson is that we have to encounter some hopelessness in our aspirations for material satisfaction if we can really to come to the point to really give our whole heart to the personality of Godhead. But if we do that, then Krishna's reciprocation will be more than sufficient. And that's basically our challenge. That's up to us. Our relationship with Krishna is completely up to us. We can decide, I'm going to surrender 10%, I'm going to surrender 20%, I'm going to surrender 50%, I'm going to surrender 90%, I'm going to surrender 100%. And basically the association of devotees is meant to inspire us to surrender more, a greater percent than we've already made a deal with Krishna. Krishna, I'm going to surrender this much. I hope you like it. And so by the association of devotees, by their enthusiasm, we decide, well, actually, I could surrender a little bit more. And then when we surrender more, Krishna reciprocates more, and we become inspired to surrender more. So actually the process of devotional service is very progressive. And based on Krishna's reciprocation with how much we've surrendered so far, we get impetus to surrender more and more and more, until if we're fortunate, we get to surrender completely to the Lord. And Pingala was speaking like she realized that actually she could give up this business of prostitution and just engage in the 9 items of devotional service. And Krishna would take care of her, just like he takes care of Madhavendra Puri and other personalities, or the 6 Goswamis who gave up everything just to engage in devotional service. And actually, Krishna is equal to everyone, and anybody at any time in their life can say, I've had enough of the material world, I'm just going to do the 9 items of devotional service and accept whatever Krishna gives me and as his kind mercy, and live the rest of my life like that. So those are a few thoughts that I could come up with on short notice. Thank you for your kind attention. I did want to say a few things about I sort of have a sense that Krishna does really reciprocate with my surrender, although it's not very great. I had a desire to go on the Polish festival tour because I was inspired by Indradyumna Swami's preaching, and even though I don't have a job or any real way of accumulating money, somehow or other for 10 years in a row I went on the Polish festival tour. So I do see that Krishna is reciprocating with my desires. One thing like we like to do for our friends is we like to celebrate our friends' birthdays. You know, we try to do something nice for our friends on their birthday. So on my 50th birthday, I flew into Pretoria, South Africa, and I got to go on Harinam, which is my favorite service, and a whole continent that I've never been to, and a whole country I'd never been to, and expense paid by Kadambakananda Swami. And because Prabhupada stresses that at the 50th year you should give up everything and travel and preach, I felt that Krishna was giving me his that for my birthday present, you know? So Krishna really does reciprocate, and with our surrender, and we can experience that as we surrender more and more. So I guess we should, as long as the prasadam has arrived, we can honor the prasadam by chanting the prasadam prayer.